take your hands off that mute button, because the Lotus Effect is coming up right fucking now!
This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, if you've ever listened to this show, you know exactly what we're talking about. Because we are fucking horrible. And we've been doing it for 216 episodes! And this one, we titled Always Be Coffee. And as you can tell from the intro music and everything we've done, it is going to be a jacked up show. So welcome. And as you know by now, the show's made up. The content doesn't matter. And I am Phoenix.
I feel fantastic. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
And I'm Phone Boy.
And we're perfectly fine with the world ending, because it's a shit show anyway. But before it ends, we'd like to welcome our Apple Podcasts and Spotify listeners and anybody else who's putting us in their ears right now.
Yeah, on LotusEffect.live, by the way.
That's right. And I'm sure if you've never listened before, you might possibly be freaking out.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, you probably are freaking out, but don't worry. It won't last long. We usually only go a couple hours. But the Lotus affects everyone differently. However and wherever that happens to be occurring for you today, we would love to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
We put a lot of time, our own time, talent, and definitely our own treasure, into putting out this shit show for you folks. We run on the value for value model. That's right, the three T's. You heard me say them: time, talent, and treasure. Of course, we don't focus so much on the treasure, but if you're interested in sending us some of your Fiat Fun coupons before they all dissolve like vaporware, you can go to lotuseffect.show and click the green We Like Money button. Send us some of those soon-to-be-extinct buckaroonies. Or you can use Cash App if you prefer, $TheLotusEffect33. That is the cash tag. You can also visit our merch store, lotuseffect.shop. We have our brand feces smeared all over a bunch of merchandise that you can show the world that you support our show by donning. You can also make a one-time or recurring payment, you know, donation thing, but why the hell would you want to when there's so many other ways to do it? Now, we didn't get any financial value this week, but that's quite okay because we get so much value from everything that you pedalheads do, including hanging out with us last night during 2.5 Bens. Yes, it was a back-to-back Bens weeks, and we had a great goddamn time as
we always do.
Oh,
yeah, so there was a lot of rants last night, I can assure you. Two and a half bends.com. You can listen to the last. Well, you actually haven't posted. By the time If you're not listening to this live, by the time you probably listen to this, it'll be posted. Because after this show, I'll actually do the post production for last night's show, and we'll actually get it up on the website. But yes, you can find all of the episodes of Two and a Half Bens on twoandahalfbens.com. Just, you know,
fantastic plug, phone boy. Now, we completely understand that you may not have the scratch to send us your cash, and that's cool. What we really value with the time we put into doing this show is let us know you're listening. It only takes a moment or two. We call it sending the ack back. And the first way that you can do that is subscribe to the podcast in your favorite podcast app. You know, that whole find, follow, rate, and review thing. We'd love if you would do that. Now, of course, as we mentioned earlier, we are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify. Wherever you get your podcast app that can take an RSS feed, you can find us. Now, we're not big on social media. We don't do the whole face brag or Titter or whatever they're calling it now. Nope, there's really only one social media we do, and it is
Mastodon!
Mastodon! Oh, wait a minute.
Hell, we're not talking. That's the after party. That's right. You can get a hold of us on the massive dong, as Phoneboy said, Mastodon. Send us a message. He is at Phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. I'm at Phoenix, Phoenix, at lotuseffect.social. You can also send us an email, feedback@lotuseffect.show. You can send us something in snail mail. Hit us up in the back channel. We'll be glad to provide you an address for that. One of the ways that we love, we say it every week, we'll keep saying it, we have such a great time with it, join us in the chat. We do Rideshare Radio or Two and a Half Bens, as you heard us talking about just a moment ago. We do that on Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. Or you can join us now, we're live. You can be in the chat during this, The Lotus Effect, and also hang out for Studio 33 right afterward, because we're going to spin some tunes and have another great goddamn time like we did last night. And that all begins at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on Saturdays. Now, if you need any of the details on how to join that, just go to lotuseffect.live. We have all the details there. You can also participate in our weekly call-in segment, which is easily done by calling or texting 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
That's right, that line is boozy because it's Google Voice, and it will mangle your transcript. You'll become a show title. You know how this works by now. So when you call 253-237-3321, which Wookiee pointed out I mistexted when I sent the bat signal out to let everyone know what the subject for today was. Apparently I put 3311. I don't know. If people don't know our phone number, well, there's no hope.
I think we got calls from two of them, so I think...
I think some people know the number.
Yeah, 253-237-3321. That's the number.
That's right. And the reason that you would want to be calling that number, as we said, is to participate in the segment we like to call the weigh-in segment, where we ask a question and you give us the answer. This week, we are curious to know, should we get rid of daylight savings time? Do you think the government should finally declare and just decide that we should stop springing forward and falling back and jerking off? And what do you think? Call 253-237-3321 and we weigh in on this oh-so-controversial topic.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think with that, it's time to take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Yeah, we're going to give it to you straight, but we're not going to take.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
That's right. Be respectful. You know the shtick. We say it every week. If you don't have the ability to be an adult, speak respectfully and not call names or shit on shows because you don't agree with the view of the host, well, then shut the fuck up. And I think with that, we've got some advice.
Yeah, we do have some advice.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
To do what? I have no idea. But...
Oh, pick me. Okay. I know. To make sure that the first segment we do, which is our health segment, pretty much we have two segments.
Well, it's basically now we talk about health.
Yeah, that's it.
And I can assure you that this show, no part of the show will ever, ever be
brought to you by Pfizer.
Oh my God, and this book, Selling Sickness, that we're reading. Yeah. Pfizer comes
worth
up a lot.
Every penny.
Oh my goodness, you got to get this book, folks. I mean, seriously, if you this is some you know, not news for anybody but that listens to this probably, but yeah, it's a great book. Now this one was actually, I won't say this one is surprising to me, but it's probably surprising to a lot of people. That at 82 this guy is as fit as a 20-year-old and his body holds clues to healthy aging.
You are an Iron Man.
Okay, well, the guy didn't run the Iron Man, but I don't know. You can't beat this dude, Juan Lopez Garcia. Really, you can't beat him. Now, 16 years ago, at the age of 66, Lopez Garcia first tried running a mile, and he had recently retired after spending his entire working life as a car mechanic in Toledo, Spain. In all those years, he'd never trained as an athlete or exercised much at all. He couldn't finish that first mile. He could barely start it. Now at age 82, Lopez Garcia is the world record holder in the 80 to 84 age group for the 50-kilometer, which is a 31-mile ultra-marathon. And in 2024, he also won the World Marathon Championship for his age group with a time of 3 hours 39 minutes 10 seconds, setting a European record in the process. I mean, that's you're doing that as an 82-year-old. I'd say that's pretty good. His outside success caught the attention of a group of European scientists who study aging. They invited Lopez Garcia to their lab for extensive testing. Their findings, published in January in Frontiers in Psychology, are at once revealing and inspiring, said Julian.
It's physiology, actually.
Oh, physiology. Okay. Said Julian Alcazar, an exercise scientist at the University of Castilla-La Mancha in Spain and a co-author of study. Now, the researchers found that Lopez Garcia has the highest aerobic fitness recorded in an octogenarian, matching that of a 20 to 30 year old man. His muscles also absorb and use oxygen unusually well, but in other ways, his biology, biomechanics, and training seem relatively ordinary. Now, taken as a whole, Lopez Garcia's physiology and performance in his 80s may help upend some common assumptions about what's possible and what's normal as we age, the researchers concluded, including whether it's ever too late for the rest of us to tackle that first mile. And yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
I don't think it is too late. I think it's inspirational that in his 80s, this guy is running ultra marathons. That's just amazing.
Yeah. There's still many questions about the trajectory of aging, said Simone Porcelli, an exercise physiologist at the University of Pavia in Italy and senior author of the study. Now, to help answer them, he and colleagues in Italy and Spain recently began collaborating on a major research project about whether growing old necessarily involves steep, inevitable declines in muscle, speed, strength, and agency. Now, that interest led them, unsurprisingly, to older elite athletes whose trajectory of aging can seem almost otherworldly. Deep into their 70s, 80s, and even 90s, these men and women typically preserve or even add to their fitness and strength, and they rarely develop serious illnesses. Now, most appear younger than their birth years. Now, what sets them apart, the researchers wondered? Is it training, genetics, luck? How do their bodies differ from those of their peers, and what lessons can we take from their daily routines? So let's talk about Lopez Garcia, a man whose aging had been both ordinary and exceptional. Now, physically unprepossessing at about 5'2" and 130 pounds, he once spent several weeks walking 500 miles of the Camino de Santiago pilgrimage route in France and Spain. But otherwise, exercise had always been at best an afterthought for him. But then at 66, he tried running and slowly, stubbornly upped his mileage until at age 70, he began to compete, starting with the 800 meters and then longer distances and eventually ultras. The older he got, the longer and faster he ran. That's not, Alcazar says, pausing for words, usual. Now, intrigued, Alcazar and his Italian colleagues set up Lopez Garcia on a treadmill and a stationary bicycle at their lab and tested his endurance capacity, running economy, fuel usage, power, muscle oxygen uptake, and other measures of how his body responds to high-speed exercise. They also asked about his training and nutrition. Now, some of the numbers proved eye-popping. Now, Lopez Garcia's VO2 max, the standard gauge of aerobic fitness, was the highest the researchers had seen in someone in their 80s. Of course, they didn't say what it was. A measure of how much oxygen the body takes and delivers to muscles, VO2 max usually declines by about 10% each decade after middle age. But his almost certainly had been rising after he reached his mid-60s and began to train in a similar to someone a quarter his age. Yeah, well, you do all that running. It's good for, you know, you get your heart moving. That's for damn sure. And now his muscles were also better able than those of most older or younger people to absorb and use that oxygen, allowing Lopez Garcia to run for a long periods at a fast, steady pace. He averaged a 9.14 mile during his record-setting ultramarathon. He also produced considerable power during each stride. Wow, that's... Yeah, I only ran like under a 10-minute mile like a handful of times when I was doing it. It's... Yeah, he must have been serious about what he was doing, you know.
Yeah, and I believe that actually meets or beats the standard for USMC even.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he didn't have an especially high lactate threshold or running economy, both of which contribute to endurance and speed. His were good, similar to those of competitive athletes in their 60s, but not spectacular, suggesting he still has room to improve as a runner. Now, even Lopez Garcia was startled by his prowess. He only thought when he started to train, he said, was to run a little to maintain my health, never to reach the level I've reached today. Now he runs about 40 miles a week when he's not readying for a competition and almost double that mileage in the build-up to a race. Most of his workouts are long and moderately taxing, but a few times a week he does intervals of various lengths, sprinting at near or past race for a brief spurt, slowing and then sprinting again. He has a professional coach guiding his workouts. Now, he also weight trains a few times a week, mostly at home, primarily with body weight exercises, and eats a totally normal Mediterranean style diet. I'm still curious what that is. The article didn't go into it.
Anymore. Yeah, but typical Mediterranean style diets, you know, consist of things like fish and legumes, cheeses, not shitty food. You know,
yeah.
Probably really good olive oil if he's in Spain.
Yeah, exactly. Or in Italy or where? Yeah, Spain.
Yeah, wherever he. I thought they said he was from Italy.
He's Spain. No,
or
no,
Spain.
No. I think one of the researchers was in Italy. So
yes, that's what I think it was.
I mean, I think I look at this story and I thought this was, if we had a happiness segment still, this would be.
Oh, for sure.
It was kind of nice to find a story like this about, like, look, this guy, you know, started in his 60s and is, you know, is running ultramarathons, which, you know, by the way, the definition of an ultramarathon is anything above 26 miles, which is a standard marathon. So, but that's still just amazing what this guy
completely
can do. Yeah. And yeah, when I get back to doing that, I think that'll be, that'll be something, you know. So Lotus no longer has any happiness. No, we just don't have a happiness segment, dude.
We just didn't box it into a segment. We're always happy here at Lotus.
Let's get happy. Okay. Well,
you know, people who, fuck it. I'm just going into it. I don't even have an opening for this one. Myopia is driven by how we use our eyes indoors, according to new research.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone.
So in a new study published in Cell Reports, researchers propose that myopia may be driven less by screens themselves and more by a common indoor visual habit: prolonged close-up focus in low-light environments, which limits how much light reaches the retina. Myopia has reached near epidemic levels worldwide, yet we still don't fully understand why, according to Jose Manuel Alonso, a PhD at SUNY, distinguished professor and senior author of the study. So our findings suggest that a common underlying factor may be how much light reaches the retina during sustained near work, particularly indoors. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is a visual disease that blurs vision at far distance and is becoming a world epidemic, affecting nearly 50% of young adults in the U.S. and Europe, and close to 90% in parts of East Asia. While genetics play an important role, rapid increases over just a few generations suggest environmental factors are also critical.
Yeah, you mean like all the telescreens that we have?
Oh yeah, don't think about that. Couldn't be part of it. So the disease can be induced in animal models with visual deprivation or negative lenses, and the two induction processes are thought to involve different neuronal mechanisms. Clinicians also control myopia progression with a variety of approaches that are thought to engage multiple mechanisms: multifocal lenses, ophthalmic atropine, contrast reduction, promoting time outdoors, and others. Now, scientists at the State University of New York, SUNY, College of Optometry propose a unifying neuronal mechanism in their article to explain all current approaches to myopia induction and control. the research offers a new hypothesis that could help to explain a long-standing puzzle in vision science. Why so many seemingly different factors, from near work and dim indoor light to treatments like atropine drops, multifocal lenses, and time spent outdoors, all appear to influence myopia progression. In bright outdoor light, the pupil constricts to protect the eye while still allowing ample light to reach the retina, according to Usura Mahara, also from Sunny's Optometry. She's a doctoral student who conducted the study. When people focus on close objects indoors, such as phones, tablets, or books, like you said, phone boy, the pupils can also constrict, but not because of brightness, but to sharpen the image. In dim lighting, this combination may significantly reduce retinal illumination.
Oh, by the way, I thought of something a little earlier here, and I figured this was probably the point to break in. So remember how when we were kids, their parents would tell us not to sit so close to the television, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, okay, so now, of course, the reason they gave us is because, well, the CRTs generate a lot of radiation. It's probably not good for our eyes. But I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm going, well, it's also a distance thing, too, right? It's like, okay, do you really need to be that close to the television? I mean, you can see it from, a reasonable distance away instead of, like, getting up on it, and then yeah, you lose all perspective on things. I think there's something to the having some distance between you and the television. Honestly.
Well, okay, so if I can add in another element, what about when you go to like a movie theater? The lighting is absolute shit. The screen is huge, and depending on where you sit, yeah, you could be sitting very, very close ultimately to that screen.
Yeah, it's probably not. Yeah, I mean. Yeah, it probably has the same effect, I think. But
probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think that was the extent of my interjection here, I think.
Good interjection, at the very least. So according to this mechanism, myopia develops when poor retinal illumination fails to generate robust retinal activity because the light sources are too dim and the pupil constriction is too excessive at short viewing distances. Conversely, myopia doesn't develop when the eye is exposed to bright light and the pupil constriction is regulated by image brightness instead of viewing distance. Exactly what you were saying, phone boy. Yeah. So the new study demonstrates that negative lenses reduce retinal illumination by constricting the pupil through a process known as accommodation. For example, an accommodative increase in the lens power of the eye when focusing on images at short distances. Such pupil constriction becomes stronger when accommodation is increased by shortening viewing distances or wearing excessively strong negative lenses. Moreover, pupil constriction becomes even stronger when lens accommodation is sustained for prolonged periods of time, for example, like tens of minutes. So if you're staring at your phone screen up close for an hour or more, yeah, you're really damaging your eyes. And even stronger when eyes become myopic. So if your eyes have already become myopic, like I'm nearsighted, yeah, staring at a screen up close, very bad.
Yeah. Well, also, too, I think this is and for myself. Right. So I've actually had the same prescription for several years now because, yeah, I don't wear my glasses all the time. I wear them when I need to. And I only wear them for as long as I need to because I don't really, I don't really want to wear them all that much because after a while, yeah, they give me kind of a headache. So like I said, I'll wear them when I'm driving or maybe when I'm out in certain places and I might watch television with them on. But that's as much as I don't wear my glasses most of the time. You're usually yelling at me to get my glasses but that's part of why, right? Because I'm not wearing my glasses all the time, so I'm giving my eyes the exercise, right? And I think that's actually something, nobody ever talks about the fact that your eyes are muscles, right?
They forget that fact.
Yeah, and they need they need exercise too, right? And yeah, when you're sitting there reading your fondal slab at a certain distance in the middle, it's like it's not good for you, so. Yeah, don't do that for so long.
I think you could pretty much stop it, stop putting your face in the fondal slab and you'd be good. No more explanation needed. Now, this study also demonstrates additional myopia disruptions of eye turning with accommodation and eye blink efficiency at constricting the pupil. Now, if proven correct, the mechanism proposed could lead to a paradigm shift in our understanding of myopia progression and control. According to this mechanism, myopia can be controlled by exposing the eye to safe, bright light levels under limited accommodative pupil constriction. So basically, go the fuck outside. Get some vitamin sun.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, there's this guy I've been following that is basically walked people off of glasses, right? And if you do certain eye exercises all the time, and one of the things he says is to go, you know, basically go outside and stare, you know, far away, right? And just open up your eyes, motherfuckers, right? And yeah, if you do that consistently enough, yeah, you can actually walk back your prescription. And you use weaker and weaker lenses, but yeah. So I think there's something to all of this. I'm pretty sure, right? And I think that's it gets back into all the systems that are designed to sort of make you a customer for life. Your optometrist is a great example of that.
Oh, you're slipping into the selling sickness again.
Yeah. Well, I think this next one might sell into selling sickness, because yes. RFK Jr. claimed that keto diets cured schizophrenia. Now, here's what the science says.
Most people will experience tremendous reductions in anxiety within 3 days to 3 weeks of starting a ketogenic diet. In fact, we did a study where patients with bipolar disorder, major depression, or schizophrenia tried the ketogenic diet, and 43% achieved clinical remission from their chronic mental illness. And 64% of them left on less psychiatric medication because it improves the balance of chemicals in the brain. But the question is, what's causing those chemical imbalances in the first place? And so let's start there.
You know, it's funny. I have a lot of clips of Dr. Georgia Ead, who's a psychiatrist who ends up being low carb and discovered that actually a lot of psychiatric problems could be fixed by eating a ketogenic diet. And yeah, I mean, considering that like a ketogenic diet was like the cure, you know, it was for epilepsy back in the day before they had the drugs that killed River Phoenix. So I had to go find this clip. This was because I know I've got a couple of clips on Georgia Ead that probably talk about schizophrenia, but this was actually more recent thing that she did. And I thought it had some pretty killer statistics on it. But
yeah, still just as impactful.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been inaccurately claiming that patients with schizophrenia were cured through ketogenic diets. And you had a doctor in that opening clip basically saying that this is bullshit. Now, anyway, the latest instance in which medical experts, and we know what an expert is, right? Experts, especially this, they're paid pharma consultants or, you know, paid anyway, they're something
paid pharma shills.
That's right. Says he has overstated nutritional science. These are medical experts. Don't get any new information in nutrition.
Yes. They get absolutely no training.
Yes. Doctors. Dr. Drew Pinsky, I've already said that before anyway, but his comments spotlight an emerging body of evidence that food can improve the lives of people with severe mental illness when medication alone isn't working. I'd start with the diet first, but that's just me. There's a germ of truth here, said Dr. Ken Duckworth, a medical director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which raises awareness about mental health and advocates for improved patient care. But the science is not sophisticated yet. Yeah, the science wants to keep you as a customer. Anyway, the psychiatrists say chronic mental illness like schizophrenia are managed and not cured.
I'm sorry. What kind of doctor is Dr. Georgia Ead?
Yeah, she's a psychiatrist.
Oh, but they just said that psychiatrists, you know,
yeah,
are saying that chronic mental illness like schizophrenia are not managed and not cured.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
A clinical remission sounds pretty good to me.
I was going to say, could you please define clinical remission?
So there's, okay, so this actually gets into something we talk about in the managing sickness. Basically there are certain markers or criteria that they're looking for to match a specific disease. Now, we can argue how those criteria come up with, and if you're reading the selling sickness book, well, basically Big Pharma is inventing the disease and priming they're chumming the waters to get people to buy their blockbuster drug that will kill them like River Phoenix. Anyway, that's so this is yeah these people are evil. So they designed it. But if it, okay, so, but no. You asked me a question about what does it mean, clinical remission, right? So there are criteria that are defined to say you have this disease or you don't, right? So if your markers go below those levels, then you've achieved clinical remission because you don't meet the criteria anymore. It's much like that happened to me when, you know.
Okay, so we won't necessarily use the word cured, but I would damn sure say that if you're not meeting the markers for the criteria, that's pretty well managed, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, it's much like how I reversed my type 2 diabetes. I no longer, it's much like I explained it to that, how did you do that? I said, I no longer meet the diagnostic criteria for diabetes. That's clinical remission. So,
yeah. So let's get back to the doctors whose work that Kennedy cited.
So the doctor whose work Kennedy cited for the claim disputed how the nation's top health official described his work. Now, preliminary research has shown potential in using the high fat, low carbohydrate diet to treat several mental illnesses, but with crucial caveats that Kennedy did not offer. Well, keto
did perchance they offer what those caveats were?
Well, let's read along, shall we? While keto has been embraced as a fad diet for weight loss, research has long shown medical use for the diet under careful supervision. The diet, which alters a person's metabolic state, it's called ketosis, folks, has been used for decades to manage seizures for children with difficult to treat epilepsy. Yes, that was what they used to treat epilepsy before they had drugs. And when the drugs didn't work, people like Charlie Abrams had a ketogenic diet and he has a normal life now. You know, fuck these people. You know, patients with schizophrenia featured in case studies and followed in small trials have shown similar improvement. Now, large randomized.
Wait a minute. Time out. Burp. You just right there says that patients with schizophrenia in these trials showed improvement, but yet at the very beginning, they contradict themselves. Am I the only one who hears and sees that?
Well, there's a difference between small trials and large randomized control trials, which is the goal.
A trial is a trial is a duck is a duck.
Well, okay. However, because they're talking about the gold standard for evidence-based medicine, right? Right. These are people that they compare to people who receive a particular treatment with those who do not, and have not demonstrated that patients with schizophrenia are better off with a ketogenic diet than medication alone. But if it provides some benefit, why the fuck not try it?
I mean, you're not hurting anything by trying the diet. And well, we know why, phone boy, because if they try the diet, then they realize they don't necessarily need either as many or at all these poison medications, and they go, fuck it, keep your prescriptions, doc.
Yes, Kennedy and his allies in the anti-vaccine movement often demand similar trials for vaccines, which scientists have described as unethical for immunization because they withhold proven protection from diseases from children and unnecessary because the vaccines have been extensively studied for safety and efficacy.
Bullshit.
Yeah, by who?
Safe for who and effective at what? Do we need to bring in the vaccine assimilation to autism? I don't think we do. I think it's well known by now.
Now, as Health Secretary Kennedy says, his decisions are guided by gold standard science. Now, Kevin Klatt, an assistant professor in the Department of Nutritional Science at the University of Toronto, said Kennedy's comments about the keto diet illustrate the contradiction between the extremely high bar the health secretary sets for evidence of vaccine effects and the low bar for nutritional advice.
Is this guy mentally fucked? Oh, wait. Never mind. He's Canadian.
Well, don't hold that against him.
When he makes an ass up head statement like that, yes, sir, I will.
Well, okay, but
got a brain, eh? Well, I don't think you do, eh?
All right. Kennedy has long pointed to the American diet heavy in processed foods, refined carbohydrates, and added sugars as a primary driver of chronic illness. Well, no shit.
He's not wrong.
In February 4th, remarks at the Tennessee Capitol during a national Take Back Your Health tour, Kennedy claimed that the food Americans eat drives mental illness.
Dude, hey, wait, I didn't know this was going on. What the hell?
Yeah, he invoked.
We totally would have driven to Nashville, even if it was with the Waymos in the area.
Yeah, exactly. Now, so he invoked a case of the Harvard University psychiatrist who said cured schizophrenia using keto diets. He repeated the claim in an interview on Theo Von's podcast that was published Thursday. Yeah, Dr. Georgia Eads also done it too, you know. Christopher Palmer, the associate professor, was, although she used the word clinical remission, so, you know. Christopher Palmer, the associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, whom Kennedy referenced, said in an interview that those patients are better described as being in remission rather than being cured.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly what Dr. Eads said.
Yeah. Although if you're in remission, you know, I mean, okay. Isn't that good? I mean, is it being cured? No, that mean anyway, just
why are people focusing so much on the cure? There is no cure for things like schizophrenia, but you can make it where you don't have to take all of these drugs that have more horrible side effects than the worst schizophrenic episode you've ever had.
Yeah. So let's see. Okay. I think I've skipped ahead a little too far. So scientists are studying the fat heavy keto diet in psychiatric care because it triggers a nutritional ketosis state in which the body burns fat in addition to glucose for energy. Yeah, that's the whole reason you go into ketosis. Anyway, that sets off changes that affects the brain and body, including reducing inflammation and improving mitochondrial dysfunction. Yes, I can assure you that all of this is true from my own experience. Researchers theorize that the changes during a ketosis state ease mood swings and hallucinations in people with severe mental illness. It helped my mental state. It was the only reason I was able to survive the last few years of my marriage, I think. I'm pretty sure. Those benefits must be weighed against risks such as short-term electrolyte loss and long-term nutrient deficiencies and the challenge of sticking to such a restrictive diet.
It's not really that restrictive, though. No, I mean, okay. Let me ask you a question, phone boy. Do you feel that eating the way that we eat... And pedalheads, you can feel free to weigh in the chat. We post the videos on YouTube of what I cook for our show evenings. I've posted shorts of other things. Does it look like we're eating restrictively? Why? Because we don't have shelves full of ho-hos and Twinkies? Because our freezer isn't stuffed full of TV dinners? Yeah. I mean, I'm very confused restrictive they think this truly is.
Well, actually, honey, I think what it is because, yeah, you can't go out and eat their shit because if you actually eat the way we do, yeah, when we go out and eat...
Because we demand more of what we put in our bodies?
Yes, apparently, yeah.
Everyone should do that, no matter what their budget is. Demand more. Don't just grab a pack of hot dogs filled with God knows what lips and assholes... Because you don't have time to cook. It takes just as much time, I assure you, to take those hot dogs and like a can of beans and heat them up as it would to take a steak and prepare it to whatever temperature you would like. And if you put some broccoli on at the same time that you're cooking that steak, a little butter on top of that, and you've just saved yourself seed oils, you've saved yourself grains, you've saved yourself all kinds of nasty sugars and things you don't need in your body.
There we go. Now, keto diets are part of a broader burgeoning field of metabolic health that scrutinizes how the body's production and use of energy influences illness. And in a 2019 paper, Palmer spotlighted the cases of two women who had schizophrenia for decades and stopped using antipsychotic medication and remained symptom-free years after starting ketogenic diets. He said their stories offer a little glimmer of hope that schizophrenia may not be a permanent lifelong disorder that patients must tolerate. Well, what would you rather tolerate, the keto diet or schizophrenia? Well, you decide. Palmer noted, however, that the patients needed to remain on their diets to manage their conditions, although they were able to be less strict with the diet over time. Now, other patients who tried the diet and did not have similar outcomes. He cautioned that his work was preliminary and that far more research is needed to routinely recommend dietary changes for patients with severe mental illness.
Okay, question. Do we have indelible proof that they were following the diet regimentally as the people who were successful with it? That's my question.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, let's see. Although the patients spotlighted by Palmer stopped taking their medication, he and other researchers cautioned that the studies are designed to examine ketogenic diets as a supplement to drugs rather than a replacement. Because, of course.
Yeah, because he can't go all the way out on the limb and say, come off the drugs and just clean up your diet. That would get him in a whole boatload of trouble. We know that.
Yes, exactly. And if we know about the drug fluffers, as we the detailers, is I think is what they're called. But the
I think so.
But I think I need to write down drug fluffer as a
drug fluffer is very good. You know what else is really good? The cavalcade of stupidity, because the one, the only Rev Cybertrucker has come in strong, loud, and proud with this week's submission. So, Phone Boy, take it away.
Hi-de-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Founded in Vancouver and consisting of American Richard Marin and Canadian Tommy Chong, Cheech and Chong are a comedy duo that found commercial and cultural success in the 1970s and 80s with their stand-up routines, studio recordings, and feature films, which were based on the hippie and free love era, the drug and counterculture movements, and their love for cannabis. Some of their best-known comedy routines and songs include Basketball Jones, Santa Claus and His Old Lady, and Sister Mary Elephant, with perhaps their most famous skit from their self-titled debut album, Dave's Not Here. From their 1978 album Up in Smoke, this is Cheech and Chong. Earache my eye.
All right. I love that song, by the way.
I love me some Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, we'll play the version with the skit that goes with the song, which I think is actually, we'll play that in Studio 33.
Yes, we will.
We will. I play it on the stream. It plays on the off hour stream sometimes. So, all right. I think it's time for Tales from Rideshare, is it not?
Yeah, it was another really short week, like one day. But that's okay, because it was kind of refreshing, and the weather didn't hurt all that much, because we've had a couple of nice weather days. But it was really refreshing to be able to get in the car and just make a little bit of money. And I'm noticing some new things on the platform that are kind of positive, so we're going to see how that goes. No real interesting riders to speak of, although I did have a really lovely conversation with a older woman of color, and we actually kind of had that sort of conversation. Was like, you know, this woman and I actually had the conversation like you and I have about the fact that it's manufactured. The hate is manufactured. It's,
of course,
you
it
know,
is.
It's supposed to be like that to keep the dissension. And why? Like, what differences are there between this and that? And it was, we were having actually a conversation about the fact of, like, back in the day, you got your ass tore up. I'll just be frank about it. Like, your parents would spank you. Some went overboard, let's be honest. But for the most part, you know, your parents could spank you, and there wasn't a lot that was done about it. Now, I can remember being, you know, young, probably less than double digits. And that's when the schools started being like, oh, if your parents hit you, you tell us, and da-da-da, they'll get in trouble, da-da-da-da. It's like, right. and my dad's going to whoop my ass until that worker gets there if I pick up the phone. Hell, he's going to dial the number for me. So we basically, you know, had the conversation about the difference in respect that kids or young folks have nowadays. We talked about the dress situation. You know, I think that was something I might have mentioned last night, about the way that young folks just have no respect in the way that they leave the house. And it's mind-numbing to me that pajama pants and Crocs are an appropriate dress to these folks. Sweatpants, like, ugh. I can't. It makes me so nauseous. If you don't have enough self-respect for yourself to put some actual clothing on before you leave the house, just stay in. Do the world a favor so we don't have to see your t-shirt that's two sizes too small and your belly's hanging fucking down, or those three nipple nibblers that are on your hip because you just can't say no to your boyfriends because they all have different daddies. Rant over. Let's jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
We don't have any special plans right now, except to listen when we get to that segment. We're gonna ask. We're gonna play your calls for. Do you like daylight savings time or nah? I've had enough of that shit. Whatever your feelings on daylight savings time, please be sure to dial a phone and rant into 253-237-3321 after you hear my stupid message saying, welcome, you're experiencing the Lotus Effect or some bullshit like that. I can't remember.
We would like to experience your phone calls. So call 253-237-3321, especially if you want to rant about daylight savings time. Should we keep it or should we trash it? But in the meantime, I know y'all are wondering what I'm cooking. And as usual,
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
Yeah, I did make actual food, and I amazingly got it all done on video and in our belly before the time that the show had to start. And what I made was a wonderful brined roasted chicken with butternut squash and carrots on the side. Oh my gosh, it was beyond amazing. We took butter, literally, and just took chunks of it and set it on top of the vegetables because I forgot to butter the vegetables. But that's okay, because that's a taste sensation. It's
like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Yeah. It was quite good. And we have more of the veggies too.
I made a plethora of the veggies, and I love the fact you eat squash. That's like such a thing. Like almost every time we have squash, you are so proud of the fact that you actually eat squash now.
Yes, well, probably because I like butternut squash definitely a whole lot more than whatever squash that other people like to eat. It's a texture thing. It's like the same reason I really don't like okra. It's just slimy. I don't like it. It's also why I don't like tomatoes for the most part. It's a slime thing. That's a texture thing. I don't like eating slime. It's bad enough I cough it up from time to time. Now, I had a dumb this week. At some point during the week, I was actually sitting out on the balcony on the third floor, and I was enjoying a vape that I have, and at some point I had kind of lost track of the vape, and I was going where I couldn't find it. It was just here. Because I was sitting outside and I eventually came back in. But yeah. Okay. So then I go all the way down. I'm like, I don't know where the hell this vape is. And I get downstairs and I have to put shoes on in order to walk on the thing. I took my shoes off. That's right. And all of a sudden I hear a thunk and I'm going, there's my vape. It's on the ground.
He looked on the second floor. He looked on the first floor. He looked everywhere. It was like it had just vaporized.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it probably got caught in my pant leg or something like that, because my pants are slightly longer than I am. And so, yeah, I have a little.
And he's becoming quite Southern because he has that cuff that you almost could walk off the length.
Yeah, possibly. Well, if I had a little less around my belly, it might actually work better. But anyway, that's a whole different.
Well, maybe you need to get some more on your ass from your belly because you have no ass.
Yeah, well, something along those lines. But anyway, I just thought that was a silly thing. I don't know. What else did we do this week, honey? I mean, you know.
I'm trying to think.
You want to talk about your your internship?
Ugh, why would I want to talk about that again? I'm sure that anyone who's anyone listened to 2.5 Bens last night and heard me rant about how abjectly horrible that this internship is turning out to be. Self-guided. That's the two words that will forever haunt me when it comes to this internship, because there's not even the minimal amount of effort being put in for myself and the other two mouth breathers that I'm stuck in this particular internship with. I really don't know what to do other than do my homework, because there's incomplete information. It's way over the head of what an intern should be doing by leaps and bounds. I mean, you've even said, Phone Boy, that seeing the list of what's being asked of us is just, it's an overreach.
I mean, I think it would be, given the amount of information she's given you and the fact that y'all don't, this is the kind of thing that, like, they pay professionals to do. And it's just kind of, I kind of looking at this and scratching my head and going, well, if there was somebody competent in charge of this and delegating tasks to the interns, it might make sense to do this task.
It would make a lot more sense.
Yeah. And probably the other kids are going to just shove it all into AI and come up with something.
Yeah, that's pretty much my guess. I'm not going to, because I hate AI. I will not use AI. I will take an absolute F. I will quit. No. The answer is no. And when pushed, the answer will continue to be no.
Ah, hell no, as they say, right?
Exactly. And when it comes to a specific AI, looking at you, Open Claw, hell no.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was...
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Exactly. Well, anyway, although I will say that it is interesting to be sitting in Starbucks again, although I'm not a huge fan of Starbucks, but finding a place that is relatively close to where you're at, it's proven to be a little bit of a challenge. So the Starbucks is not perfect, but at least they serve somewhat acceptable coffee, and it's not. And actually, it was nice yesterday because the weather was nice, because it was like 70 or something, so it was actually reasonable to sit outside for a little while. But unfortunately the weather is going to go back down again, so yeah, you know, and that's as usually what happens. So
even, you know, tonight it's supposed to be down in like the 30s or something, but they didn't come here to hear us talk about our damn weather or my bitching about the internship. You know, they came for the tarot reading, baby.
Well, anyway, yes, that, yeah. So, we actually, and which reminds me, we got the second calendar from Lorian and Spencer, which is good that they got that. They had this. We looked through that calendar. Oh my goodness. Yeah. What she shows off in the calendar, definitely not for the kids. It's funny because the one we're giving one of the calendars to somebody else. And we actually, I won't put the calendar in my office because sometimes, my work screen faces that way. And no, I don't need there to be any sort of any of that on my possibly showing up on a work call. That's just not a good idea. That's a very bad thing. So, all right. Meanwhile, I have a tarot book, and I can't even, yeah, it's got one of these Chinesium names that they have on it. It's like somebody just sat on a keyboard or something. It's like Kashmir walked on the damn keyboard or something and came up with that. Although I don't think look at this. It's like BQLX. BABLI or some bullshit like that.
Are there underscores and exclamation points? I mean, seriously, this looks like a bad code job.
Yeah, I know. I don't know, but anyway, it was a nice tarot deck when I looked at it. I didn't really care about the brand name. It's kind of got this nice, it's got flowers and shit on it, and you know, it's.
You becoming foofy?
Well, with my tarot decks, I am. But let's see what we got here. We have the Nine of Pentacles. as I've drawn here. And the Nine of Pentacles, you know, when I think about that card, it is like it's like you're on the cusp, right? Of great things, right? This pentacles usually refer to abundance or maybe wealth, if you want to look at it that way. But yeah, it feels like there's been a lot of work that's gone on, right? And it's ready maybe to manifest. And we've got the Magician in the reverse, and now there's definitely some folks out there that right now are doing black magic, and they're trying to, as people are starting to, you know, we've been talking about all of the things that have been, you know, the revelations that have been occurring, and there's going to be a whole lot more revelations coming up. I think there's folks out there that are actually using the dark forces to try and keep you in the matrix, but don't listen. You know, that's what, you know, just be careful out there, folks. Let's see, we'll get one more card. We've got the Page of Cups. Written cups. When we talk about cups, we talk about love, relationships, that kind of thing. A Page of Cups, and this guy, I'll post a picture of these cards in the chat here. This guy looks like a prince. He's holding a chalice with a rose on it. Yeah, this deck has a lot of roses in it. I think that's one of the reasons I picked this deck. Well, that and the color scheme was kind of cool, but I think there's gonna, yeah, I think we're reaching a point now where there's what was the song by Don Henley, there's not enough love in the world. Well, I think we're gonna see some more of that, more love. We need it. Unfortunately, we've been in this system for so long of teaching how to hate each other, and let's stop doing that. Right? Let's start with us. You know, we can't fix everybody else, but let's try to treat everybody around us with dignity and respect. And you know, we can.
Did you forget what show you're on, dude?
Yeah. What?
I said, did you forget what show you're on, dude?
Oh.
Seriously, I swear to God.
You're gonna play a clip on me?
No, I might not. I've thought about it. But I'm just asking you, like, you forget that part of the slogan for this show has been coined.
The offensive has begun!
Part of that is don't be racist. That's my job. And yes. Now you're saying we should all hold hands and snuggle and blow each other.
No, I didn't say that. Just don't be a dick to each other. That's which is exactly.
Where's the fun in that?
Well, you can break the balls, but don't be a dick. There's a difference, you know.
Some people have not learned the differentiation.
Okay, well, you know. All right. Anyway, so that's I'm done with tarot for this week. I think after that boring, I don't know. I think after that, we need a wake up call of some sort.
The world needs a wake up call. We're gonna phone it in.
It's 253-237-3321. I am curious to hear what our pedal heads had to say about should we get rid of daylight savings time. We have a text, of course, that came in from Mama T. She says, absolutely, 100% yes, and I don't care which way they go with it, but get one side or the other and stay there. We could not agree more here. Fuck daylight savings time.
Okay, this is, by the way, I want to point out something, because this is something that when I lived in Washington State, and then they Oregon, Washington, and California, all three of these states passed bills that said, if the government lets us go to daylight saving time, we're going to do that, and we're going to opt for that. Well, you know, if you really cared about stopping daylight saving time, you know what? There's already something in the law when they made daylight saving time mandatory for, you know, when they did that, they said you can opt out at a state level. Right. Which if you look at Arizona and Hawaii, neither of these states do daylight saving time. So if Oregon, Washington, and California were actually serious about ending daylight saving time, no, they want to be special, and they want to be advanced an hour because they think that they're extra special, whatever. I don't know. But I really don't give a fuck whether it's daylight time or standard time, just quit fucking changing the clocks. I think that's what I need to say about that. That's all I can say about that. Now let's hear what other pedalheads had to say.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I think we should abolish daylight savings time. And I think the time should be stay at it like it is in the springtime and stuff like that. It's more daylight. But, yeah, we should abolish daylight savings time. Love you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Yeah. Abolish daylight saving time. Blame Canada. All right. Here we get a different pedalhead right here.
Phone boy in Phoenix. Yep. It's the Saturday. Beautiful, beautiful Saturday. Oh, yay. I don't know. I've always enjoyed daylight saving time. I know, yada, 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 wasting time, yada, yada. You know, like, and there has to be weird things. I've ever had, like, a job where, like, you're working at the hour it switches. You know, it's, like, 2 a.m. or something like that. I don't know. But, like, you could be, like, lose an hour, you know, whatever, just things like that. I think it's just fun because not everybody, but everybody around you kind of has to, like, a little bit of, like, everybody just gets tweaked just a little bit, you know, kind of thing. Like that little bit of like discomfort and somehow just throws everybody off. Yeah. So I say yay, but I get it. Whatever. If people want to get rid of it, I'm not going to complain, but I think it's kind of fun. Everybody just has to adjust, and then people complain, like, oh, my gosh, yeah, it's so weird, everything's there, man. I'm like, get over it, dude. You've dealt with it your whole life. You can't, you know. But, yeah, just a little bit of force change. So, adjust. But not some hill to die upon. So, all right, I love you guys. Stay dangerous, and whether or not you're dying on the hill or you're crawling up the hill, go ahead and give a hearty howdy.
Ka-ka! Thank you, Mr. Christopher Battles. Wow, someone who actually does not mind daylight savings time. That's very interesting.
Well, yeah. I mean, hey, look, you know, time, does anybody really know what time it is? Anyway. But okay. We don't. Hey, if it works for you, you know, well, I don't know. I still wish we'd stop doing it.
Man, fuck daylight savings time. I can't stand that shit. Twice a year, you fuck with my head, you fuck with my circadian rhythm, you fuck with my paycheck if you're in, you know, like a total wage-like job where you have, you know, shift work and stuff. Plus, each time you switch, there's like an increase in heart attacks, an increase in strokes and shit because people's bodies just can't fucking handle it. Yeah, we need to get rid of daylight savings time. Kill it. Nuke it from orbit in the heart of a nuclear sun. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much, Dame Jen. I love that. Nuke it from orbit. We need to nuke daylight savings time from orbit. That's a great idea.
I'm almost afraid of these next two, the next two calls here.
So these last few weeks have been hell. Absolute fucking hell at work with all the layoffs we've been having to deal with and just assorted crap. But there was one bright spot last night when one of my friends gave me a quick question. She asked me, what do you call a lesbian on fire? Now, keeping in mind, my friend is a lesbian. Her and her wife, absolute sweethearts. So I'm like, okay, what do you call a lesbian on fire? She gave me a grin. And all she said was, LGBBQ. That's all. Love y'all. Have a good night. Icon bye.
Icon bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Dame Bemrose. Oh, my goodness. LGBBQ. I think I have to write that down.
The show title.
I think we might have to use that term now, LGBBQ. It's a thing. All right.
Nope.
Yeah, like I said, this one.
Today's question is a trick question because if anyone answers no, that we should keep switching time zones randomly the way it is, then the men in the white suits are going to show up and carry come take you away, haha. Because if you actually like the system where we fucking switch our time zones twice a year, then you're clearly messed up in the head.
Well, okay. Yeah, I think we know who that was.
Oh, no, 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 no. No, I'm actually not sure.
I think it's Rye, I think. Anyway.
That didn't sound sexy enough, growly enough, or pissed off tech ragey enough to be a Sir Bemrose. No fucking way.
I don't know. Well, anyway, we'll... I think I've seen the number before, but who knows? Anyway.
Besides which, doesn't his phone live turned off in a drawer? It couldn't possibly be him.
Exactly. Well, that too, yeah. So, anyway. So, I'm not sure what we're going to do next week for our weigh-in topic. I mean, it is becoming spring, you know. What is your first sign of spring where you're at? I think it.
I thought about that. I think we've done that before, but we can recycle.
Yeah, I think that's a recycle. So let me put it in the script here, because.
So you have all week to figure out what you consider the first sign of spring. It's personal to everyone, so call 253-237-3321.
Exactly.
And let us know.
That's right. So we should probably go on to now.
I was going to say, I think everybody knows our position on do we think that daylight savings time should be abolished. And I like I said, I think Dame Jennifer put it best. Nuke that shit from orbit. Yeah. And with that, I think we're going to go on to our second half of our health segment, which will never, ever, ever be.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because they pay me every time I do. It's a really good way to make money.
Yeah, and if you're reading this selling sickness book, oh my God, the amount of, you know, yes, I think I saw Hill and Knowlton as one of the reference PR agencies in some of the stuff. And for those of you who are no agenda adjacent, yeah, the PR shenanigans that these guys are pulling, oh my God, yeah, brought to you by Carl's Jr. I will say Mike Judge was a fucking prophet. He was just a little he was a little too optimistic in his projections.
In his timeline,
exactly.
But you know who's not optimistic? The researchers who are discovering that if you drink coffee, it might help you to prevent dementia. That idea is not exactly so far-fetched.
Drink the coffee, it'll make you feel better.
A new study seems almost too good to be true for those of us who believe that coffee lives matter. Drinking coffee may help prevent dementia. As a coffee drinker myself, in copious amounts, I was initially skeptical of the claim. It seemed to be yet another instance of a paper hyping up a superfood to validate a habit that many of us already have. After all, almost half of all the Americans in the world drink coffee, whether you live here or whether you live abroad. Americans are drinking the bean juice. The jitter liquid is fucking amazing. But this study, funded by the National Institute of Health, NIH, and published in JAMA, was unusually convincing. The researchers analyzed data from more than 131,000 people over multiple decades. Every 2 to 4 years, participants completed detailed questionnaires about their diet, including coffee and tea consumption. Well, now stop right there, because we all know, Phone Boy, that people lie on these food surveys. I'm just putting it out there.
Yes, of course.
Questionnaires, whatever you want to call it. So investigators tracked dementia diagnosis, cognitive testing results, and self-reported problems with thinking and memory, with follow-ups extending up to 43 years. Now, I'm going to say that is mind-boggling to think that for this to be recent, this study had to have been begun in 1983 is when this study was begun. During the study period, roughly 11,000 participants developed dementia. Those who regularly drank caffeinated coffee had an 18% lower risk compared to people who drank little or none. Now, regular coffee drinkers also performed better on some cognitive tests and were less likely to report mental decline. Interestingly, people who drank higher amounts of caffeinated tea experienced similar cognitive benefits, whereas those who consumed decaffeinated coffee did not. You should be shot, drawn, and quartered if you're drinking decaf, but I digress. Caffeine's apparent benefits remained even after accounting for factors such as genetic risk for Alzheimer's, smoking, obesity, overall diet quality, and socioeconomic status. This study adds to a growing body of research suggesting that caffeine may support brain health. Exactly how it does this isn't fully understood. Scientists have proposed several possible mechanisms, including reducing inflammatory chemicals and improving blood sugar control, since both chronic inflammation and diabetes are linked to a higher risk of cognitive decline. The existence of a biological basis is reinforced by another finding in the study. There appears to be an optimal range of coffee consumption beyond which no additional cognitive benefits was observed. 2 to 3 8-ounce cups per day, or roughly 300 milligrams of caffeine. Wow, I'm getting my daily dose in one cup, folks. I'm knocking back at least 30 ounces per cup, but I digress. This plateau is physiologically plausible, as the body can only metabolize so much caffeine before its receptors become saturated.
Now, here's my question. Have they done any science to find out how much that is?
Probably not.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can, as somebody who has consumed more than his share of bean juice, there's a certain point at which the caffeine kind of doesn't help. And there's sometimes it doesn't help at all. So, you know, I don't know. One of those things.
Especially if you're drinking decaf.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's also plausible that caffeine itself isn't the primary driver, but rather what it enables. A morning cup of Joe may make someone more alert and mentally active. It also stimulates your colon, but we're not talking about that. So perhaps coffee drinkers are more inclined to tackle a crossword puzzle, read the newspaper, or join a book club. All activities that could support cognitive health. No. That's no. Just because I drink shitloads of coffee. And I don't do crossword puzzles. I don't read the damn newspaper. I use it for my epoxy shit. And why would I join a book club when I can simply read with my partner? It's a great couples activity. So, in any case, caffeine may be less a direct neuroprotective agent and more a catalyst for behaviors that keep the brain engaged. If a daily cup nudges people toward greater mental stimulation and social interaction, that too would be a meaningful benefit. Now pay attention to what goes into the cup. A 2025 study found that people who drank at least one cup daily had about a 14% lower risk of premature death. The benefit, however, was seen primarily among those who drank black coffee or coffee with minimal added sugar and saturated fat. Fuck that, full fat, heavy cream all day. So loading coffee with sugar and cream may offset potential advantages by increasing risks such as diabetes and heart disease. Yeah, if you're putting oat milk, which isn't milk, no nut juice, okay? If you're doing milk, it needs to be full fat, and then you should just be using heavy cream in coffee. But I digress. I'm a little jaded. So skeptics are right to caution that these studies are not definitive. We already know that regular exercise, a healthy diet, good sleep, and social engagement are powerful contributors to brain health. Coffee's hardly a substitute for those foundations. No, but it certainly doesn't hurt. That's for damn sure.
Oh yeah, there was other parts in this article that I didn't include about the fact that maybe you shouldn't give it to children or anything like that. I think Vinny Tortorich would disagree with that because, like, you know, I don't know. He, of course, it is. Yeah, I don't. There are probably some people that shouldn't have it, but there, I don't think there's anything wrong with having it, even at that age. I mean, honestly, like, you know, I think he said as a kid that he used to. It was probably equal parts milk and coffee, but it was still coffee that you were drinking.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I can remember coffee milk back when I was a kid. You know, a little splash of coffee, some sugar in the milk, and you thought you were just, you know, the cat's meow. And, you know, as I'm reading this story and I finish up and you're giving the commentary, I'm taking a big, long, slow draw off a delicious coffee and cream concoction over here. And that's it. It's just jitter juice and moo juice.
Yes. Well, moo cream. But anyway. All right, so now we're getting into I don't know, I think they're now, somebody's pissing off the natives here, but because Trump ordered to promote weed killer sparks fury in the MAHA movement. Monsanto. Yeah, because President Donald Trump's move to boost domestic production of a widely used weed killer is facing swift and fierce backlash from some supporters of the Make America Healthy Again movement, a key part of his political coalition. On Wednesday evening, Trump released an executive order calling glyphosate, the active ingredient in Bayer's Roundup products, crucial to the company's national security and defense.
What? This man has lost it. Impeach. Article 25.
I was going to say bomb them, and bomb them again, because I think you could actually use this stuff for that. I don't know. I mean, probably. I don't know.
It kills people as effective as it kills weeds.
Yeah. Tens of thousands of plaintiffs and lawsuits have alleged that the herbicide could cause non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and Bayer has sought legal immunity from such claims. Yeah, Trump's, yeah, because probably they're, anyway, yeah, Trump's order has reopened fissures on the health issue, between the administration and the MAHA movement started by Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was part of a team that won a $289 million judgment in 2018 against Roundup manufacturer Monsanto. That's why we played the beginning clip there. Bayer later acquired Monsanto.
Now, hold on, I have a question. Because he is the Health Secretary, is this not a direct conflict of interest with the fact that he was part of the team that won that settlement against that manufacturer?
You know, there's so many conflict of interest in the system.
I know that was probably a stupid waters wet question, but I had to ask it.
Yeah, that's a rhetorical question at this point, because yeah, that's one of the things you learn about reading this selling sickness selling sickness book. Yeah, you can see how many people are on the take and
this
making money.
Is a new
wow.
Sorry, that would be a misfire on my board. I missed my finger went whee.
Yes. Are you going to play a clip, or what are you doing here?
No. I got butt-fucked by a soundboard, because as we were talking about the fact that, you know, it's a conflict of interest for the health secretary to have won a judgment against a chemical that our president is saying is vital to security and shit. I mean,
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Yes, MAHA activists blame pesticides for contributing to poor childhood health and want to limit their use. While running for president as an independent in 2024, Kennedy said glyphosate is one of the likely culprits in America's chronic disease epidemic. Since Kennedy joined a Republican administration traditionally allied with agriculture and other interests that favor pesticides, he has largely refrained from criticizing their use. White House spokesperson Kush Desai said the president's executive order is not an endorsement of any product or practice and is necessary to build modern weapon systems and grow enough food for the United States.
This guy is so full of shit.
That's what I said. They say it right there. They're using it for weapons. Bomb them, and bomb them again. I mean, you know, not that I condone such behavior, but that's basically what they're saying. I mean, come on.
Actually, Bully Steed brought up a really interesting point. That apparently Israel is possibly spraying glyphosate in new territories in Golan?
Yeah, I have no idea. I haven't heard anything, but wouldn't be, you know, who knows? I mean,
I'm sorry, but it wouldn't surprise me since Trump's dick is buried so deep in Netanyahu's ass right now that I'm surprised he's not giving him a courtesy reach around.
Well, anyway, I don't know. I don't know anything about that. And yeah. But the Department of Health and Human Services and the Agriculture Department are pursuing more research into sustainable agricultural practices, including crop protection tools, he said in a statement. President Trump pledged to protect our country and make America healthy again, and this administration will never compromise either priority, although...
I'm sorry. When you're promoting the use of a chemical that causes so many health issues, how dare you make that statement? I'm sorry, I've been a staunch supporter of 47 since all of this, since back when he was, you know, 45. This is a bridge too far. This really does not align with what our country needs to be doing or attached to. That is my personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, Now the Trump administration is invoking the Defense Production Act, which is a Cold War era law granting the president broad authority to direct domestic industry to boost production for glyphosate. Yeah, who's to say that of course, you know, I'm thinking why, you know, just because he orders them to do it, he doesn't have any power to make them do it. Although, of course, you know, because Bayer is part of the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Yeah. It's like, oh, more of this is going to get sold. Yeah, we're going to buy it. You know, we're going to make it. Yeah. We don't care how bad it is for the environment, but, you know, that's not our problem. Depending on how the executive order is implemented, some MAHA and environmental activists said they believe it could shield glyphosate manufacturers from certain liability suits.
It wouldn't surprise me, much like they did with the COVID vaccine manufacturing debacle.
Yeah, exactly. Now, key MAHA leaders are working to boost Republican in the midterms, but some say the executive order could jeopardize their alliance. Zen Honeycutt, a longtime Kennedy supporter and the founder and executive director of the nonprofit Moms Across America, warned that Trump was alienating voters who helped put him in office, and many of them mothers who voted Republican for the first time in 2024 and could be hard-pressed to do so again. Without restricting and or banning glyphosate, we will not make America healthy again, Honeycutt said. You're probably right about that.
I have to agree with that.
Yes. As for comment on the executive order, Bayer sent a statement attributable to Monsanto saying that the order reinforces the critical need for U.S. farmers to have access to essential domestically produced crop protection tools such as glyphosate.
Kill them, and kill them some more.
We will comply with this order to produce glyphosate and elemental phosphorus. On Tuesday, Monsanto announced a proposed $7.25 billion settlement to resolve the cancer lawsuits without admitting liability or wrongdoing.
Bingo. And you think this is just the tip of the iceberg with what we are seeing. If you want my opinion, I hope all the fertilizer factories blow the fuck sky high. You want to talk about nuke it from orbit? Won't you point your little harp array toward those bastards? Boom!
Yeah, well, that would release all that in the atmosphere. Let's try not to do that.
I'm sorry. By using it on the crops, you don't think that's releasing it into the atmosphere and also into the food system, phone boy?
Well, it's...
Think about that statement for just a half a second. What's worse? Releasing it all at once and hoping you take a couple of those fuckers out with it? Or letting them spray it on the crops and feed it to our kids' kids?
There's probably other ways of doing it that don't involve the blowing stuff up.
No, we don't have to. They're going to do it themselves. Have you seen how unstable this shit is with these people working down in Texas and whatnot?
Yeah, well, yes, I've definitely... Yeah, that's what I said. It's probably their weapons-grade glyphosate. I think that's probably what... I think I need to write down weapons...
I was going to say, weapons-grade glyphosate is definitely a show title.
Yes, I think...
So, I will talk about the fact that regulators in the U.S. and Europe have offered different assessments on the cancer risks of glyphosate. The EPA has said the chemical, quote, is not likely to be carcinogenic to humans. That's a fucking lie. And a European Chemicals Agency committee has said that classifying glyphosate as a carcinogen is not justified. But the International Agency for Research on Cancer classified it as probably carcinogenic to humans. So ultimately, left hand and right hand can't stop arguing with whose propaganda they're going to go with, because they're all clearly lying. Oh, well, it's possibly a carcinogenic. Right. Is that like almost a virgin, kind of a virgin when we're talking about olive oil?
Yeah, exactly. Now, a journal recently retracted a 2000 study that found that glyphosate to be safe, citing evidence that the authors may have had help writing the study from employees of Monsanto. Oh, my God. In the book, Selling Sickness, are you kidding? This is happening all the time. The PR, it's the foxes are in the hen house.
Completely.
Yes. So Kennedy said on a podcast released this month that HHS was looking into alternatives to glyphosate, but right now, if you went glyphosate outright, it would put out business 80% of our farmers. I don't know about that.
No. You know what? There are much healthier ways to produce crops. The problem is they want to have all... Oh, my God. This is such a follow-the-money scenario. It's unbelievable. When you think about how much... And believe me, okay, people think farmers get paid a lot of money. Where the money is those dirty crops like soy and it's not even the corn anymore because they're genetically modifying that. The farmers have more than just soil dirt on their hands, and they fucking know it. And the government is who put it there.
Yeah. Well, and especially with this next story, which, you know, I wonder how long the glyphosate's been hanging out in the environment.
Well, I just want to point out that Billy Steed also mentioned that glyphosate is not allowed in crop growing in the EU. So I'm wondering why they even have any clout to say jack and shit about this issue. This whole thing just does not, It just doesn't sit well with a lot of people, and that includes myself. And I'm willing to go on record and say it. I think that what he's doing is gross and disgusting and nefarious, and eventually this will filter down to someone whose hands are in this, and it will impact them. And maybe then, you know, this bullshit stops. But, you know, again, opt out, folks. But I'm not, that my rant is over about that. I'm going to talk about toxic exposure that creates disease risk over 20 generations. Epigenetic inheritance study suggests that I don't have the right board up.
Sorry to terminate.
A single exposure to a toxic fungicide during pregnancy can increase the risk of disease for 20 subsequent generations, with inherited health problems worsening many generations after exposure. Those are the findings of a new Washington State University study of rats that expands the understanding of how long the intergenerational effects of toxic exposure may last as they're passed down through alterations in reproductive cells. That's the only reason you pulled this is because it was a wazoo, God, I can't speak, story.
No, actually, the reason about this is I think it's important to realize that, you know, the stuff that we're, you know, the stuff like glyphosate and all kinds of stuff that's basically been, you know, it's been sprayed into our environment for, you know, over the last however long, right, that stuff's been happening. It has a long-term effect, folks. I think the fact that it happened to be a wazoo, you know, was a bonus, but ultimately I looked at this and I went, yeah, pretty much we don't know how long we've been being poisoned, folks.
This is true. So I'll continue with the fact that the study, which was published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, was co-authored by WSU biologist Michael Skinner, who's been studying this epigenetic transgenerational inheritance of disease for 2 decades. The research has implications for deciphering rising disease rates among humans, according to Skinner, suggesting that the reason some have cancer today may be rooted in an ancestor's exposure to toxins decades earlier. On the other hand, epigenetic research has also unearthed potential treatments by identifying measurable biomarkers for diseases that could eventually spur preventative treatments. This study really does say that this is not going to go away, said Skinner, a professor in the School of Biological Sciences and founding director of the Center for Reproductive Biology. We need to do something about it. We can use epigenetics to move us away from reactionary medicine and toward preventive medicine. Skinner first identified the epigenetic inheritance of disease in 2005 and has published scores of papers since. The effects are transmitted through alterations in sperm and egg cells, the germline. And past studies have shown that the inherited disease incidence can be greater than that arising from direct exposure to toxins. See, that's pretty interesting. So essentially, when a gestating female is exposed, the fetus is exposed, he said, and then the germline inside the fetus is also exposed. From that exposure, the offspring will have potential effects of the exposure, and the grand offspring, and it keeps going. Once it's programmed in the germline, it's as stable as a genetic mutation. Recently, Skinner's lab has been trying to determine how long those effects last and whether the disease risk changes over the generations. In a study published last year, Skinner's team looked at 10 generations of rats following an initial exposure of vinclozolin, a fungicide used primarily in fruit crops to control blight, mold, and rot. The heightened prevalence of disease persisted through those generations. The current paper, published, as we said, in the Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences, doubled the number of generations studied, showing a similar persistence of disease in the kidneys, prostate, testes, and ovaries, as well as other health effects. What's more, starting in later generations, mothers and offspring begin to die in large numbers during the birth process. The presence of disease was pretty much staying the same, but around the 15th generation, what we started to see was an increased disease situation. By the 16th, 17th, and 18th generations, disease became very prominent, and we started to see abnormalities during the birth process. Either the mother would die, or all the pups would die. So it was a real lethal sort of pathology. Now, according to Skinner, he scaled the dosage of the toxin conservatively at a level below what the average person might consume in their diet. Here's the problem, though. How do you know that you're going to be exposed to this toxin anyway? That's my question.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, they were doing it in a lab and laboratory, you know, laboratory mice, you know, so.
Well, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, but I think this is, but I think this is an interesting thought exercise. Is we don't, because yeah, we don't really know how long these things hang around, and you know, and they pass genetically. You know, I was thinking about this. I'm going, okay, so with all the stuff that they've done, we could kill all humans in, you know, I don't know, a couple hundred years or something, maybe with all the toxins they've done. Just
they're trying.
It certainly seems like it. But all right. Well, I think we're at last call. Are we not? I think that's where we're at.
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
Well, we didn't get any more voicemails. And at this point, I think we are all pretty much fucking.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it. I gotta go. I can't run this soundboard. I can't run my mute buttons. I don't know what's going on. I'm
so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you. I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.